In addition to closed captioning for TV, he has also helped many government agencies add closed captioning to web videos. Please welcome Giovanni Galvez.
Hello, everyone. My name is Giovanni, and as you mentioned, I work for Telstream, and I'm part of the caption team there. So I'm one of those people that deals with captions every day, all day long, for about 8 years. And what I'm going to present to you today has to do with verifying caption data inside of a file-based workflow. As you know, traditionally, you know, when you had a tape master that had closed captions, or if you had a baseband signal that has closed captions, well, you just connect it to your scope or your monitor, and then you can turn the captions, you can verify that they're there. But when you have an archive, a variety of video file formats of all types, and codecs, resolutions, and some have captions, some don't, some may have bad captions, or may not be correct. Well, how do we know all this, and how can we verify that that's going to work when you air the show and have the viewers at home see the closed caption data? So I'm going to discuss these issues and in my real presentation here. Okay, let's see. Aha, just press a little harder. All right. So we're going to talk about where the CA608, 708 caption data is stored in these video file formats. These two protocols of caption data are required by the FCC when you air it, especially in high definition. When you verify captions with the software, there's some limitations. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about a caption workflow summary. There's other data that's stored alongside closed captions, so we have to verify that data as well. And what about internet formats? How do we verify that the captions are going to work when you upload it to the internet? There's also common captioning errors that we can check for. And this one's important, emulating the viewing experience in the lab that viewers at home are going to see. So let's go over some samples of video files that have closed captions. These are what I like to call the usual suspects. So there's many more, but these are some of the most common. This one's a standard definition, IMX30, MXF OP1A. So it's a standard definition. It's going to only have 608 only. And if you look close, it's got the vertical blanking intervals. Some people call it line 21, VBI, on the top of the screen. And that can have, it's going to only have 608 only. But that needs to be verified. We need to make sure that they're in the correct line, that the field dominance doesn't get in the way, and before we put it on our servers for air. This is a cousin of that format. It's an XDCAM MXF OP1A. In this case, there's not going to be vertical blanking intervals. There's not going to be any physical lines on the top of the screen. The captions live in a track inside of the MXF wrapper, called a SMPTE-436M track. And it could be for 1080i, 720p. In this case, this track can contain a variety of data, including 608, 708, and VChip, XDS, and active format description. And then we have an MPEG-2 high definition video file. In this case, we have user data. The captions live in the actual MPEG-2 codec. So they're in the essence video. So it doesn't matter whether it's a transport stream or a program stream, or whether it's sometimes even inside of an MXF, it might have it. But the way it's stored is in the actual codec of the video file. Then we have advanced formats like ASO2, OP Atom. And the ASO2 is, if you've seen it, in like say a Finder window or Windows Explorer, it's actually a whole folder of different MXF file formats. So you have an MXF for the video file, you have a reference MXF that puts everything together, you have MXFs for all the audio tracks, and also there's going to be a separate MXF for just the caption track. So it's going to be a small sized MXF that has a 436M track in there. And all of these files have time code tracks also inside of the MXF. That's how they can tie them all together. In this particular example, the codec that's used for the video is a J2K codec. And you can also have, again, same like the XDCAM MXF OP1A. You can have the 608 and the 708, but in this case, it's stored on a completely separate OP Atom MXF. There's some, I would like to call them legacy file formats, but they're still being used. This is an example of a DV25, DV50 standard definition caption, standard definition video file that has closed caption data. So if any of you remember dealing with DV video, if you don't still, the resolution was kind of odd in the DV video. Because of the format, you know, if you were actually looking at the video file on your computer, it's not full raster, it's 720 by 480. And so there's no room for the vertical blanking intervals, like a full raster SD file, like the IMX30 that I showed earlier. And when Panasonic, you know, built these decks to support DVC Pro 25 and 50, as well as Sony with their DV Cam variety, they wanted a way to also capture the closed captions, capture the captions, play the captions back. And the way they stored it is in somewhere called the Vox area, the vertical auxiliary area of the actual DV codec. So this is the kind of video file that's difficult to see captions. Now, if you were to play it out FireWire out to like a DV cam, out to your monitor, the DV cam deck would know to read that Vox, so-called Vox data, and create the line 21 when it plays it out SDI or analog in a component. The wrapper really doesn't really matter for this one. It could be a DV wrapper, an AVI, or an MOV. And there's certain servers that still play this out and can give you the caption data. Like if you still have an Omnion with a DV100 port or a C-chain server, they can actually look at this. All right, let's move on. Then we have ProRes. ProRes is an interesting animal. Originally, the first ProRes incarnation didn't have an easy way to put the captions into the ProRes. So you could capture the video into, like, say, Final Cut 6 at the time, and it would put the captions into the actual video essence of the ProRes codec. And that became a big problem for a lot of people, because if you did any edits in the timeline, like you put a lower third or you did a cut, that would zap the captions in the video file and would delete them because it was actually stored in the video essence. For those of you who own like products like say the AJ Key Pro, that product still records the captions this way. So if you were capturing that ProRes video, the captions are stored in the ProRes codec. When, let me go to the next one, here we go. When Final Cut 7 came out, they decided to put the captions in a different place, a place that's easier for editors and people to see. And that's called a separate closed caption track. So if you were to open a ProRes with a closed caption track, you would see in the properties, you'd see the video track, the audio track, the timecode track, and then you'd see something called a closed caption track. And this particular closed caption track, you could actually view it in QuickTime Player. So you could open it up in QuickTime Player and turn on the captions and actually see at least the 608 portion of those. And this became a little bit easier because you could actually check it in QuickTime, and Final Cut 7 could actually play it out when you would play it out to tape, if those of you needed to do that. And it became very manageable, very easy. You could even copy and paste that track from one QuickTime to another. And then, last but not least, there's a file format that was originally intended for DVD video called a .scc. It stands for Cineris Closed Captioning. For those of you who remember the Cineris DVD authoring system, it was invented so that you could stuff caption data, 608 only, because SCC only supports 608, into the MPEG-2 when you burn the DVD. Since DVD became so popular, this file is got hundreds, maybe thousands of these files exist in some broadcaster's archive. And now they're being repurposed for file-based delivery, for insertion with transcoding solutions and so forth. The problem that engineers face with this format is that it's not human readable. In a few minutes, I'll analyze it so I can show you what I mean. And because it's not human readable, it's also difficult to check and do quality control on it. So you could spend a whole hour transcoding and inserting an SCC file into captions that reside into the, an MXF or an MOV, and then they're not in sync, or they're missing certain words, or maybe the video was re-edited and now that SCC doesn't match the final video. That's a major problem. So there has to be a way to verify the timing and the syntax of the SCC. Sometimes the SCC may have been made with a software that's a freeware software that doesn't quite create the SCC up to the specs of the transcoding engine, and then you'll get gobbledygook in return with the captions when you try to air it. So it's important to check the SCC and make sure that it's in sync and matching. All right, let's move on. So there's a lot of tools but there's a handful of tools to check caption data. And one of the biggest problems is they don't detect multiple services. I mentioned earlier that QuickTime Pro or QuickTime 7, when you open up a ProRes that has captions, you can see the captions when you turn them on and off, but you're only seeing the 608 captions. But what if you're a broadcaster that airs in two languages, where you have captions in English and in French, or English and Spanish, and the secondary language is in a separate channel? Well, now QuickTime can't show you that separate channel. You're only be able to verify the first channel. Other limitations, vertical blanking intervals. You have an SD file that was captured, let's say 10 years ago, and you have it in the archive, and it has vertical blanking intervals. Most software that detect captioning don't know what to do with this format. They don't know how to look frame by frame and detect the captions in VBI. There's other small tools that are very handy. Some of you may have heard of Media Info, and that's great, but it only detects the presence of the captions. In other words, let's say you have an hour show and there's only captions for the first 5 minutes. Well, it's going to tell you, yeah, there's captions there, but it doesn't tell you that they're all there. So it's important to check to make sure that they're complete and not chopped off. Not all codecs and caption protocols are supported. The sync issues, one of the biggest complaints I hear when I am on a support call is, okay, I just transcoded my video and I inserted the captions, and an hour into the video, the captions are about 3 seconds off. So there must have been like some frame rate problem where it's like either it was transcoded non-drop, or the captions, maybe the caption service provider that you sent it to captioned it in non-drop, and it was supposed to caption in drop frame. So it's important to check the sync, otherwise you're going to air it. And I'll tell you just a brief story. I was watching one of my favorite movies. I won't mention the network name, but on TV. It was Ronin with Robert De Niro. And I always watch it with the captions on because that's the kind of geek that I am. And, about the climax of the movie when they're doing the car chase, I mean, and after that, the captions were completely off. They were off by at least 5 seconds. And they're airing it like this, you know, and you can imagine how frustrating that's going to be for someone who's deaf and hard of hearing. And it has to do with this. It was probably captioned in 2398. Then they transcoded the video to 1080i60, but they did not frame rate convert the caption data to match that transcode, and they just aired it that way. So that's a big problem. Of course, caption text shouldn't be blocking someone's face or lower third. That has not been an issue from a legal perspective, but next year that may become an issue with new regulations that require quality and regulations in the way that the captions are done. The sync issues are going to be checked, positioning and so forth. And of course, if you're verifying a separate file, like you're delivering something for the internet, for Wowza or JW Player or YouTube, You got to make sure that that caption file that you're going to upload to your internet file is going to match. All right, so here's the main captioning workflow summary. You deliver a video to your service department. Okay, if you're an editor, you're not captioning. I mean, if you're, you know, if you own your own studio and you're a one-man, like powerhouse, maybe. But most people send it off to a service department. So you have to create a caption, like a small video file to send it to them. Then when you receive that caption file, you want to link it with the media. Okay, you have to have a way to say, okay, well, this caption file goes with this video, and so forth and so on. Then you have to embed the captions into the media, right? In the past, you had your caption encoder, and you had a tape deck, and you had another tape deck over here, and you'd press play, and the captions were inserted, right? Well, in the file-based workflow, no, you have to create your MXF or your MPEG-2, and you have to bake the captions into that media. Then you have to extract the captions when you need to upload it to the internet. The broadcasters have been asked to caption internet videos if they caption television videos. And then you have to transcode and deliver the closed and open caption. I mentioned open caption because broadcasters now are that are working for, like, say, ad agencies, like, say, during political season, they're being asked to deliver a small file with open captions so that people can sign off on it, so the clients can sign off on it. So it's important that you deliver both, and you have to have this. This is not for air, but it's simply to get the approval from the customer or the producer. Frame rate conversion of caption data. If you're shooting in 24 and you're gonna air it on TV, it's not gonna be 24. So you gotta frame rate convert that caption data to match. And the same thing goes the other way. If some of you are delivering to iTunes, iTunes wants the original 24. They want a 2398 ProRes, and then they want a caption file that matches that. But when you caption it for television, you caption it at 2997. So now you have to convert the captions back to 2398. Upload it, otherwise they fail it and they just say, no, this has been rejected because of frame rate problems. All right. Converting caption files. I'm not gonna say hundreds, but there's a lot of different legacy caption files from old captioning systems. I sometimes get calls from major networks that say, well, we have to repurpose an old Leave It to Beaver video. And now we got to put it on the web and we got to caption it. But we have this CIN caption file, some obscure captioning format. And so now we need a way to take 1,000 of these CIN files and we got to convert them to SCC, something we can use. Or we convert them to Web VTT for our internet delivery. So that's important. All right. So what other data is stored with captions? I mentioned to you that in field two, of the 608, you can contain XDS and VChip information. So even when you're airing HD, the VChip and XDS is actually stored in the 608 portion of the captions, not in the 708. 708 does not handle XDS and VChip. An active format description. Not all file formats support active format descriptions, but in the case of MPEG-2 and MXF, they do. Note, ProRes does not support active format description. Timecode track, of course. And then I talked about verifying formatting for the internet. Now YouTube is really great because they put a lot of work and effort into supporting the same look and feel that your television captions have. So if you have a caption file for TV, like an SCC, that has split captions, that has roll-up captions, that has paint on captions and positioning, that's exactly how it's gonna look on YouTube when you upload that caption file. And one of the reasons that it's the case is because one of the top programmers for YouTube at Google is actually a good friend of mine. His name is Ken. He's deaf. And so he put a lot of work and effort into the YouTube player. And in my opinion, it's one of the best, most accessible video players for closed captioning on the internet today. All right. Okay, so I talked about how captions can drift out of sync. You don't follow standards sometimes with text formatting. Sometimes you have a captioned video file, and then the network might say, you know, I'm not seeing 7.08. I'm only seeing 6.08 in your caption file, and then they reject it because you have to have both. And unfortunately, it's difficult to navigate that because then you wonder, well, did I do my transcode properly? Maybe I didn't upconvert. Maybe I had an SEC file and I didn't upconvert it to 7.08, so it only stuck 6.08 in there. And unfortunately, that's very common. And sometimes some TVs, you know, they're by default geared to only show 7.08 captions in an HD signal. So then all of a sudden you'll get a call that says, oh, I'm not seeing the captions. And you get a complaint. And you don't want that. So it's important to verify that the 6.08 and 7.08 are in your video files. Make sure that your caption files are compatible with your transcode engine and internet player. Of course, spelling and transcription, this goes without saying. And this is a big thorn on some people. When you put up something on the internet or VOD, you're not airing the same video that you aired when it went on live on TV. You know, you have your 10 seconds of black for commercial breaks in between the video segments. You don't have that on the internet. So you have to edit that out. And sometimes, you know, you maybe just cut a whole part out of your video before putting it on the internet or VOD. Well, what's going to happen is your caption file now does not match that edit. So there has to be a way to automate that so that you can edit the video and also edit the captions at the same time. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you're going to end up having to contact your caption service department and say, well, you know what, you're going to have to recaption the show because I've made these edits. And that's not good for business, okay? That's going to cost you a lot of money, and so it's important to make sure that that's also done when you edit the video for the internet. So emulating captioning TV viewing experience at home. Oops, let me go back here. Can you go back?
Hello.
Okay, thank you. I'll tell you a short story. It's important in the lab to try to emulate what people at home are going to watch. Let me explain why. Today, you know, people air stuff on TV, but most people watch their videos on a set-top box when they're watching TV, with a cable set-top box particularly. So, unfortunately, cable set-top boxes have different ways they handle captioning. And some are older, legacy set-top boxes, some are newer. And so what happens is, we had a situation with a major broadcaster, and even their legal team got involved, when a whole hundred of their viewers were complaining that they weren't seeing captions on some of their favorite shows. And when they were watching it on their scope, you know, they had a video tech scope in their lab. Well, they saw the captions there. They had the 6.08, they had the 7.08 captions. But for some reason, whoever manufactured that specific set-top box that was deployed to maybe thousands of their users, one of the older set-top boxes, they were really picky about the way the captions needed to be stored. I think they needed to be stored like SCTE20 or something like that. And so they had to set up that same set-top box in the lab to do the verification of the captions. And then when they made some fixes in their transcoding, they were like, okay, now it's working on the set-top box. It wasn't working before. So it's so important when you know that you have to deal with a variety of different pieces of hardware for viewing at home, that you kind of, you know, make sure that they're all working with whatever you're airing, especially with captioning. It's tricky, but that had to be done. All right, let's switch over to my video here. So I happen to have here a bunch of samples. So let's take a look at some, okay? This is a sample video here. For example, it's a transport stream, MPEG-2 with captions. So when I open it up and say, what's something typical here? I have media info. Okay. So media info is telling me that it's got 6.08 and 7.08 data. Okay, and it's A53, so we know that's the MPEG-2 variety. However, it's not telling me that, if it's complete. It's not telling me that it's in sync. It's not telling me any of that stuff. Well, let's throw something a little bit different to MediaInfo. Let's throw to MediaInfo an MXF. Okay, MXF captioning, same thing. This is a HD MXF. So again, it tells me it's got 608 and 708. All right, now let's throw it a standard def captioning with VBI. I know that the captions are there, but it's telling me that it doesn't have any captions. Why? Because it doesn't know how to read the VBI. All right, fine. So let's look at it with VLC. Let me turn it down. All right, well, I can see that the captions are there. There's the line 21 right there, the VBI. And VLC is saying, I can decode captions. No, well, actually, I can't because I don't understand that particular protocol of captions. Same thing with MXF. You try to play an MXF with VLC, well, you'll see the captions only if it's an MPEG-2 or if you have a sidecar file. So this was driving some of our engineers batty because they're like, we need a way to just for sure know that the captions are actually there. And originally, we had our captioning software, which you could actually drag and drop. You know, it had a catch-all. You could take a video file like that MXF or that transport stream, and you could check it for caption data. And you could decode that particular caption track as well and see whether it was there or not. And that was okay, but the problem is you needed to also play the video back in a way that you can verify the sync of it as well. Here, let me just do that. I think too many things open here. Okay. So we developed an internal tool. And this internal tool basically allowed us to detect captions in any kind of video file. So we could take an MXF and we could play it. And we could see that if it had 708 captions, it could do the advanced captioning decoding similar to, say, a TV at home does. I don't know if you've ever been to a public place or like a sports bar or something. The captions don't look with the black background. They have like translucency. They're yellow sometimes. Well, that's called advanced 708. So this supports advanced 708. You can also check for regular 608. You can check for VChip, XDS, and AFD. And then we could throw at it file formats such as the MPEG IMX, the VBI, and decode the VBI in real time like that. And this allows all our engineers at my company to be able to transcode a video and check to make sure that the captions are actually there, simulating or emulating a TV viewing experience without having to go to outboard gear, right? And I'll tell you how we got this to work, since you guys are all very technical. We were very disappointed with the limitations on a .sec file, okay? This is a .sec, and this only contains 608, and it's not supposed to support any other frame rate other than 2997. It's not human readable. It doesn't contain 708. You can't put multiple languages in it. It definitely doesn't support AFD or VChip or any of that stuff. So we came up with a file format called MCC. That stands for Mac Captioning File Format. And we didn't want to come up with a new spec because that's the last thing people need. It's a whole new spec to deal with. What we did is we just did a data dump of the VANC. We read the VANC in the video file, and we just dump that data into a text document, as is. So it's not a new spec, it's literally just a representation of what's in the video file as far as closed caption. And in that video file, you can see this is what it looks like. This, all of these codes represent the VANC, and it's by frame. And so this supports all the different frame rates as well, 24, 25, 30, 30DF, 50, 60. All the active format description, VChip, multiple languages. You can have up to 6 languages. You can have actually 63 services, but due to bandwidth situations, most people can only put stuff 6 languages on their broadcast. So now that we have a data dump of the VANC, that's how we're able to read the captions from these video file formats. So we can look at a player like this, and when I'm opening a video file, I'm actually looking, it's immediately making a dump of the VANC and allowing me to read it. So the actual captions that you're seeing here in the VChip readout, that's all coming from that MCC file format.
Okay.
As time goes by, more and more people are adopting the MCC file format, like Sony Vegas, Adobe, Creative Cloud, Manzanita, Harris, Nexio. They have a way now to read it. Blackmagic HyperDeck. You could take a video file, an MCC file, and play it out of your HyperDeck, and it comes out with HD closed captions. Because it's just a data dump. It's exactly the same data that's in line 9 of HDSDI. All right. And last but not least, I'll talk about some automated workflows. So since once you verify it, now you need to convert it to other file formats. And here in our in this solution, our Vantage workflow solution, we have a way now to call up the captioning engine. And we can set up a watch folder to detect any kind of caption file, cap file, CIN, SEC, whatever, and convert it to another caption file. And this makes it so much easier for engineers because you don't want to have to learn a whole new subset of tools. If you have a workflow already, an automated workflow, well, let that also transcode your caption files as well as your video files. And this really came in handy during this year's Olympic Games in Sochi, Russia, for one of our major customers, who you probably know who it is. And they had a situation where they were getting PAL MXFs with captions embedded into them, okay? And they somehow rigged a way to stuff 608 and 708 into an XDCAM, PAL HD. And then, of course, they also had the broadcast from the U.S., which had, it's XDCAM 60i. That was had caption, that was all right. But then they also have other videos that weren't captioned. And then they had JPEG files, and they all put it into this big storage. And then they asked us, like, well, you need to help us, like, sort this out and also transcode the PAL XDCAM to, an MPEG-2 for VOD, for Xfinity. So we set up this workflow, this very same workflow for them, 1 week before the game started, which was really nerve-wracking, but we got it done. And this watch folder is going to look for everything in that directory. And if it's not video, if it's a JPEG, it's just going to move it. Just going to move it out of the way. If they're videos, XDCAM, it's going to identify which ones are PAL and NTSC. It's going to analyze that video file. If it's NTSC and not PAL, it's just going to go in and flip and deploy. That one's ready to go. It's got captions. But if they're PAL, then we need to do all sorts of things here. They're going to be moved to this workflow, and they're going to call up with this notify action our caption engine. And in that caption engine, we are doing a frame rate conversion of the PAL captions to 2997. Caption files. And this has to be done, in parallel to the whole transcoding workflow. Once we convert the frame rate of the captions to match that final output, then we can flip it and deploy it. And so this is an example of how verification of caption data and frame rate conversion of caption data can work in an automated workflow. It doesn't have to be a manual process. It doesn't have to be a captioner there sitting retiming it or manually doing it. All of this stuff can be automated. And okay, so that's my presentation. Any questions from the group? Yes, sir.
This JSON player that you demonstrated, is this something that's going to be made available publicly or incorporated into one of your larger packages?
I'm glad you asked. Yes, yes. We are working hard to deploy it as part of our Switch player. So we just released something called Switch. Currently, we've added the ability to open up any video file, LXF, MXF, GXF, MPEG-2, whatever, and open up a SCC file to check verification. Like that. And this player also will have an inspector, okay? And this inspector tells us how many audio tracks and what the codec is, and also it'll tell us the audio meters. But we're going to also add that functionality that you saw in our internal tool that we call JSON Player. And yes, the programmer for it is, his name is Jason. So that's coming. We're hoping that we can have that ready for everyone in the industry by the end of the year. Anybody else have a quick question about caption? Oh, yes, sir.
This is a simple one. Sometimes when I convert caption formats, I'll have a special character like a music note, and it will get lost in the transcode process.
Yeah, that's really an interesting question. As you know, music notes for broadcast TV have a specific control code. And that control code needs to be translated when you're converting it, say, for the internet or for other file formats. For when you're converting it to another caption file format, like an SEC, it's okay because you're just putting the control code there. But when you're converting it, say, to a web VTT or something like that, you might get something completely different. And you might get a character, but it might not be the music note. And that may be a limitation of the actual captioning software. Because when you're using the captioning software, it's looking at control codes and it's interpreting that control code as a character for you to view it, you know, for the user to interface with. But that mechanism might be old. And so when you add like new features to your captioning software, like say export for web VTT for the web, you may not take into account that what you're showing in the screen, it's actually a representation of that control code, and it's not giving you the correct character when you're outputting it to the internet format. So that's something that can be easily fixed though. So if you see that, you know, contact the caption software manufacturer, and it should be a quick fix. All right, well, I really appreciate your time, folks. Please, again, if you have any more questions or if you like my card, I'd be happy to help you with any captioning-related questions. Okay, thank you so much.